What's up, people? Welcome to the Black Comic Creators Podcast, a show where we talk to Black comic creators and Black manga creators and get to know more about their creative process, about their work, and just their overall business. So I'm Brandon Calloway, your host, and I'm also the writer and creator of Black Spartans Manga. Let's get to it. All right, so welcome to another episode of the Black Comic Creators Podcast. We have a really amazing guest here today. We got Alan Brooks. I don't even feel like I can, you know, do justice to all of the stuff that he does, but he's a creator of graphic novels. He is actually a professor of graphic novels, and I'll let him hop in and tell you a little bit more about itself, because I know I can't do it justice.
Yeah, man. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, thanks for coming.
Yeah. I'm just trying to do everything. So you know, I write graphic novels. I work with different artists. I draw some. I write a weekly comic for the Colorado Sun newspaper.
That's what's up.
Called What I Miss. It's a political, social.
Yeah. I actually seen it. I did see it.
Yeah, and so that comes out every Friday, and it's free on their site. It's just
Colorado. I mean, because you just did one of those about the George Floyd trial.
Yeah. So I'll be going for the hard stuff there, and so I do that. I also host a podcast called Motherfucker in a Cape, which my mother hated that name for a while, but she got over it. And then let's see. So I teach graphic novel writing for the MFA program at Regis University. And I also teach some writing classes for this place called Lighthouse. That's more for like just adults who don't want a degree but want to improve their writing.
Yeah. You've published a few graphic novels yourself, right?
Drop
the names of those.
Thank you. The Burning Metronome, which is like Twilight Zone with Usual Suspects, is kind of a supernatural murder mystery. Then Anguish Garden, which is post-apocalyptic Western. It's like a allegory for leaving white supremacist movements. So that one, I put out the first book of three, and that's been pretty well received. And I teach graphic novel writing for the MFA program at Regis University. I already said that.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Stuff, whatever.
But you get my point though. So much.
Yeah, right. Oh yeah, and I just did a TED talk that hit a million views.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is dope. Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I knew about that TED talk too. I'm trying to get that. I'm trying to get to that status. Trying to get to TED talk status.
Man.
How long you been writing? How long you been doing this?
Not that long actually. So. I've been reading comics since I was five. My pop was a journalist. He retired from USA Today like 3 or 4 years ago.
That's what's up.
But he wanted me to read more, so he got me into comics. And so, you know, in those early days, it was like I would go to conventions and it would be like me and then just a whole bunch of white dudes in their 20s and 30s. I was like the only kid and the only black person, you know?
Yeah.
Except for Brian Stelfreez, he was there as an artist, you know, in the early days. He draws Black Panther and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Did you meet him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he doesn't remember this, but when I was a kid, he used to know my name and stuff, you know, like, because he was just happy to see other black people. So he'd be like,
yeah, I bet.
You know, Brooks, what's going on? And he would give me like drawing tips and stuff like that. But as far as writing, around 2016 is when I decided I was going to write. I talk about this in a TED talk, but I was just very unhappy. I was selling insurance, and it was the squarest job I ever worked. And I was just very unhappy. And I decided I was just going to try my hand at writing. And then all these crazy things have happened, you know. So
yeah.
So I found this artist that I work with. Who you look like you had a question, you know?
We were just talking about this, and I've read The Burning Metronome. Was that your first one?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I just started, you know, with my own comic
back in, I don't know, 2019. So not sure. and then didn't really, really start going with it until 2020. And that whole, like, I started thinking about it back in 2018. Okay. And I did a lot of research and was like, you know, looking up writing and watching videos about writing and trying to, because I didn't want to write something like, he picked up the ball. That was the thing I was I was so scared of doing. Yeah. When reading The Burning Metronome, I feel like it's masterfully written. And the fact that that's your first one, I'm wondering, like, did you take training courses on, or did you study and research writing? Yeah. Or were you like, oh man, forget this insurance, I'm just gonna jump in and just picked up some paper and was like, boom, masterpiece. Like, is that how it happened?
Boom, masterpiece. I think it would be funny if I just named the comic Masterpiece. Yeah. Just like, come to it. Nah, these are good questions, man. All right. So the way I approached it was, it gets kind of deep, man. Like around 2016, I started seeing all these rappers and different people who were around my age dying. Right. And I was like, if I die right now, I would die as an insurance agent. And I wasn't happy with that.
Yeah.
So I decided, you know, I'm just going to go for what makes me happy, right? And I had done stuff with music for years, and I never got what I wanted out of that. And so I was like, all right, comics was my first love. I'm going to go into this comics, and I'm just going to do it. I got some money saved up, and I'm going to do it. And so I did start listening to writers' podcast. Instead of listening to music in the car, I just started listening to writers' podcasts. I decided I was just going to fill my heart, my mind with that stuff. Basically, there's one called Writers Panel on hosted by this guy, Ben Blacker, and he has like all these TV and movie writers on of different, you know, properties that you've heard of. Mm-hmm. And they talk about their process and how they got in the industry and stuff like that. And then I also started listening to How I Built This by Guy Raz. It's NPR. You know it?
Yeah, so I listen to How I Built This consistently.
Yeah.
I listen to a lot of How I Built It. It's probably my top podcast.
Word. Okay. Yeah. So between those two things, I was like, all right, I'm not about to half step. I'm going to go at this fully like it's a business. And if nothing comes of it, I'm going to at least know that I put my best into it. You know what I mean? So, basically, there was a project before that I was kind of writing on. It was like one of the homies had a comic, he had an idea and he had an artist working with him and he asked if I would help write it. But then when it got down to it, he sort of stifled every idea I had, but he didn't have his own ideas. It's very frustrating, right?
I hate that. I hate that.
Yeah. So I was like, all right, man, I can't do this. And then I talked to the artist and I was like, hey man, I'm out. I can't do this. And the artist was like, please stay until we get one issue out. And then, you know, because I've been trying to do this for 6 years.
And, like, and he knew that as soon as you left, like, it wasn't going to be no hope in it ever right. happened.
Right. So I hung out for the one issue because I was basically hoping that this artist would follow me to other stuff. And he did. And so it's the brother who drew Burning Metronome. His name is Deion Harris. He's a very talented guy. So then I got him. And then I met this white dude, Matt Strackbine, who's a really talented designer from Longmont, Colorado. He designs like textiles, like clothing. Like he designed the Olympic ski team's uniforms for like 9 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but he's a big comic book dude. So connected with him. So he did our lettering and coloring and book design. And then I did a Kickstarter to try to put this book out. Now, I'm from Atlanta and I have love for everybody that I grew up in Atlanta with, but support is not a big thing that I'm used to. People don't really, you know, traditionally in my past, people didn't support things that I was trying to do. Mm-hmm. So I was terrified doing a Kickstarter, you know, like I looked up how to do successful ones and, you know, I worked at it, but I just didn't know what it was going to be like.
Yeah.
But it was incredible, man. I was trying, I think my goal was 8,400 and we raised like 16,000.
Wow.
Yeah. And most of the people who gave were like, people like from my college I hadn't talked to in 20 years. Like they shared it in alumni groups that I'm not even part of because I'm antisocial, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, and I was like, what? like I see these names coming up and I'm like, I haven't seen them in 20, I wonder what they look like now, you know, like that kind of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Then I was able to, I sent out press releases and I was able to get a little press on it. And, you know, it just exceeded all my expectations. It was really, it was humbling, it was wonderful, it was dope, you know? And the cool thing about doing the Kickstarter course means that I could pay for the art, because I had to pay Dion. He didn't want to be a partner, he just wanted to be hired.
Right.
And then, so I could pay for the arts, I could pay for the printing, and not come out of my pocket.
Right.
And then I fulfilled a Kickstarter, you know, give everybody their rewards. And then I still had like 700 books to sell. So that was all pure profit from a business perspective.
You right, know? Right. Yeah, that's a good profit.
Yeah. So then I started like going to bookstores and being like, hey, like local bookstores, you know, and being like, hey, will you carry this? And the first one that carried it was this store, Mutiny Information Cafe in Denver. They are the place where I wrote most of it. So, you know, like they saw me writing it and then I had it and they bought it. You know, I was like, yeah, dope, man.
Yeah, that's what's up.
Words. So then I started getting into like buying tables at conventions and sending out more press releases and stuff like that.
So you hadn't like had a table at a con before you, like before you did that, which is interesting because, you know, like a lot of creators have a like all kinds of different like must do's, like, oh man, you got to go to cons and build up your audience before you launch a Kickstarter. You got to make the whole book before you launch a Kickstarter. And so that's it's interesting to see you doing, not necessarily against the grain, but it's different people have different things, and it shows that like there's no one way to do it.
I definitely agree with that. I mean, I would say it didn't make sense for me to go to a con if I didn't have anything to sell. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, like to pay for a table, because you pay for a table, you got to make that money back. And then you have to have, you know, hopefully you don't just hit zero, you know, mm-hmm. like you make some money. So, but I do think trying to build up an audience is wise. And it is good if you have the book ahead of time, because if you do the Kickstarter, then people don't have to wait 6-8 months for it, you know. Mm-hmm. But I didn't have that. So, and I left something out, but like, when Dion, before I was sure that Dion was going to draw it, I had been hanging out with the comics community in Denver. And I know comics artists, at least for a decade now, who say they're working on stuff and nothing's ever appeared, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I thought, okay, well, I don't have any money right now. So if I can find what these artists want to draw and be like, hey, what are you into? What do you want to draw? I'll write a story for it. And they would say, yeah. So I did that for 5 artists, thinking that I might get 2 back. And I only got 1 back. That was Dion. The rest of them, rest of those stories have disappeared into the ether, never to be heard from again. Oh, so man. It's very possible that Burning Metronome might not have been my first book, you know, if the other artists had finished stuff.
Right, right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So basically, I was just like about it. And even when it came to getting the Burning Metronome, you know, I think the thing that writers don't recognize is that comic art, like drawing comics, is hard, right? Like it's a lot of labor. It's like drawing 200 tiny illustrations per chapter.
Yeah.
Right. So comics artists have all the regular insecurity that other artists have, plus all that labor. So like they usually don't finish. They usually don't, even when you're paying them, you know? And so the ones who can finish are the ones you really want to hold close.
Yeah.
But for somebody to sign up, oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just saying that's a really good point. It makes me, you know, realize how lucky I am, because my artist, like I went on Facebook and I just said, hey, any Black artists, drop your Instagram. Nice. And then I went to their Instagrams and I found 3 of them. And I said, I was like, hey, can you draw my character? Can you draw my character? Can you draw my character? Two of them got back to me. One of them didn't. They both drew it, and I liked one better than the other. So that's how I picked my artist.
Word.
And they like they are fat. So shout out to Macchiato Studios. Nice. That's who draws my stuff, and they are fast. They are respond like they.
I love that.
I have no doubt that they are that they will ever, you know, not finish something. So yeah,
that's fantastic for real, because I've written. Artists have come to me and asked me to write stuff. And I've written for 15 different artists and I have two books. So what does that tell you?
Did they pay you for it? Or actually, like, collaborate with them?
The deal was that we will co-own it, you know. But you know, it's a hustle. Like, it's about, like, creating something's one thing, selling it is a whole other thing, right?
Yeah.
And I think people can't even get themselves to finish creating it.
Yeah, yeah. It takes a special person to have that creative mind and that business mind. All in one package.
Word. Well, okay, so we got that book out.
Yeah.
And then I started doing interviews. So just so anybody who's listening who wants to figure out what press releases, the real thing is that the press doesn't care that you're putting something out. They don't care. They care about is if it's connected to an issue they already have to write about, right? So they were writing about police brutality, which of course is kind of ever present. So I had police brutality. I covered it in that first issue that you read.
The first issue of Burning Metronome, like, makes you, it forces you to stop and think about police brutality. Even if you're just trying to go through it and be like, oh, I just want to look at the art. Like, not, like, no, it's not going to allow that. I can see why if I'm a reporter writing about police brutality, that's absolutely something that I want to cover.
That's the thing, right? So basically, I sent out a press release that said, you know, graphic novel addresses police brutality. Now, because they were already having to write about it, police brutality, they were like, oh, we can incorporate this. But if they didn't respond to that, I would have picked something else out of the book and wrote another headline and sent it out. That's kind of how it works with press releases. And usually when you get one person to cover you, then you can write all the other people back again and be like, now I was covered in the Denver Post, you know, and then it just builds from there, you know?
Yeah.
And then after a while, they start to kind of know you. The point where I realized I'm that dude is when Black Panther came out, both of the local papers contacted me to get my opinion on the cultural impact of it. And I was like, all right, I'm that guy, man.
Yeah. That's what's up, man. So, you know, speaking of, like, the more traditional, the Marvel Comics, DC stuff.
Yeah.
I think you said you've been reading comics since you were five.
Yeah.
What types of stories or what things do you feel like inspired you to either get into writing comics or inspired the comics that you've written?
Yeah. Good question, man. When I was a kid, it was definitely like I was following artists more than I was following writers, you know. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I was big into X-Men, so a lot of Art Adams, John Byrne, Gil Kane, you know, like a lot of like 70s, 80s really dope dudes.
Yeah.
But when it came to like thinking about the kind of stories I want to write, I really actually thought about Twilight Zone a lot. Like Rod Serling, this dude was in, you know, so, you know how they say like never meet your heroes and never look up your heroes, whatever, because you'll be disappointed, right?
Yeah.
But I looked him up and it was not that. That dude was 100 proof, man. Like,
wow.
Yeah, so he wanted to write about the lynching of Emmett Till. This is way before Twilight Zone. And he got censored. And he tried to write about war. He tried to write about sexism, racism. He got censored. And he would just go to the press and be like, I wanted to write about this, and they censored me. So they called him the angry young man of television. Right.
So ain't that so crazy?
Right.
Ain't that so crazy?
Right.
he just said, "Hey, man, look, all these other people messed up." Said, "Oh, you tripping? Stop tripping."
That's how it go, right? Yeah. So they basically he fought that battle for like 12 years, and then he figured out, oh, if I hide my messages in sci-fi and fantasy, I won't get censored. He was not a fan of sci-fi or fantasy. So he sat down with Ray Bradbury and was like, hey, teach me how to write sci-fi. And that's the Twilight Zone. So every episode is about something. And when people try to remake it, they usually focus on like the weird, the twist, but they leave out the social commentary.
Mm.
And so there's this interview, well, no, he did a commencement speech for UCLA in 1966. The audio is on YouTube. And so I listened to it, and they brought him because he was like the Twilight Zone guy, right? He used it, to advocate for civil rights. And I was like, all right, Rod Serling. He was like, who are we to tell the Negro to wait for their rights? And I was like, get him.
Yeah, that's right. You know, as soon as they give you a chance to speak, you're like, all right, cool. And you run with it.
Yeah, and so, but there's so much power to me in story, because I feel like there's a way that people, like if I come to somebody and say, hey, you are doing this wrong, you know, our defenses go up. That's just a natural human thing.
Right.
But when you can take somebody on a journey in a story and bring them to the conclusions that you want to, they may not always agree with it, but at least they've been able to go on a journey, excuse me, and engage with those, you know, those issues. And so so Rod Serling was a big influence. Walter Mosley, you know, who wrote Easy Rollins, he's a, you know, Black novelist. You remember Devil in a Blue Dress, that Denzel Washington movie?
Vaguely. It was a while ago.
Yes, yeah, it was. It was like 25 years ago or something. But the author of the novel is Walter Mosley, and he wrote maybe 20 novels with those same characters. And he did a very good thing with like social commentary and history wrapped in like a detective novel. So like a lot of that influenced me. And now a lot of comics are doing a lot of really interesting theatrical and big things, you know, like there's this French comic called Canopy. This is outside the Marvel and DC thing, but it's a French comic called Canopy, and it's brilliant to me, right? Because it has no words, so it didn't even have to be translated. And in just the art, it's by this woman, Corinne Bernadou, I think is her name. But in the art, it talks about things like losing your identity in a relationship, not having boundaries, you know, making a healthy choices, just in the art. And I think that is brilliant. You know, like that's like maximizing the medium of comics to be able to do, to deal with those hard topics without any dialogue.
Yeah, yeah. You said it's Canopy?
Yeah, yeah. And Corinne with a K, K-A-R-I-N-E. And her last name is Bernadou. But I've just been reading a lot of different stuff like that. And it's been taking me into a lot of like, what are the possibilities of what we can do with comics as the medium, you know?
Yeah.
And it's been really cool to see people push for bigger things to happen in comics.
Yeah,
you know, like
yeah.
I still love superhero comics. I don't know that I mean, I guess if I got hired, I wouldn't create a superhero. I would write a superhero if I was hired to write one, but I wouldn't create one, mostly because in my mind, I can't figure out why somebody would dress up in a costume and punch people to stop crime, right?
Yeah.
But I love reading them. Like, you know, I've accepted, like I have a Batman ring on right now. See that? You know what I mean? Like, you know,
what if you created a superhero that didn't do that? Like, what if your superhero didn't dress up in a costume and I don't know, off the top of the head was 100% defensive and so never attacked anybody, but
don't talk about superheroes.
You said what?
You're like, don't talk about the superheroes, man.
No. I don't think everybody should like everything. I think when we step outside the box of you know what typical creative is and expand creativity, we come up with something, we can come up with something great. That might be a really dumb idea that I just threw out there.
I don't think so.
Right now, and be like, oh man, this is trash.
Well, so the thing is, like, here's a few things. One, if I were hired to write a superhero, I would try to take an original approach. Because I love superheroes, but superheroes have existed. You know, Superman was 1938, right? I mean, arguably there were superheroes before him, but like the mainstream superhero, 1938, right? So we're almost at 100 years. We're getting there, you know what right. I mean? And so superheroes have been done straight. They've been parodied. They've been like people existing in the world. There's all these different iterations of that superhero trope that have been done. It doesn't mean that there's nothing fresh, but generally for me, what I want to write doesn't fall into that.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I was thinking about like, okay, if I got a choice, like if I would write Mr. Terrific, right? From DC, you know him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I was thinking about like, what would be interesting, because I've seen him written terribly. When they did the New 52, I feel like it was some white boys writing it, but it was divorced from a black woman, and he had a white girlfriend, and they had like this line where the black woman was like, "You don't know what it's like to be a black woman in this world," but it just felt very fake. And
it felt like I am going to pick up the
yes, right. And in that book, Mr. Terrific kept saying, "I'm the third smartest man in the world," right? Like over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, did you take a test?
Who ranked it? How do you quantify that?
Yeah, and why are you bragging about it? And why do you mention it 5 times an issue, right? So I thought it would be fun to like if I did it, it would be like, I would do it like that show Frasier, where he's like arrogant about his intelligence,
mm-hmm.
but he encounters like a hood cousin who's more intelligent than he is. Do you know what I'm saying? And I would probably go for the humor with it, just because he's such a, like, the very fact that you name yourself Mr. Terrific is already setting you up to
for
jokes. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, so I love superheroes. It's just when I'm creating the things for myself,
mm-hmm.
You know, it hasn't come across to yet. But I also say it is hard just from a business perspective. Marvel and DC own superheroes.
Yeah.
I think they own the term superheroes. Like seriously.
Like legally. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's hard to launch a new superhero universe. I mean, people, you know, Valiant Work has been trying to do it. They've kind of come and gone 3 or 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
I forget the name of the black owned company. I think they're in Detroit. They're taking on a lot of creators. Aletha Martinez draws for them. I can't remember the name. Oh, Lions Forge. They're doing a superhero universe first, you know. But since Marvel and DC have such a monopoly on superheroes, it is hard to create a superhero and stand out and build a following. It's not impossible.
Right, right.
Yeah. You know, Kirkman did it with Invincible, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think when you look at like what the sales of comics are, you know, there's a website where you can see kind of like what monthly and yearly sales of comics are.
Yeah.
Marvel and DC hold the top, and then Image Comics, you know, be like, you know, third place with stuff. And then, you know, they get smaller and smaller. But then when you look at manga, it's mm-hmm. outselling American comics in America.
Yeah.
And so like, what kind of stories are they telling?
You know? Yeah.
And so so I think there's just a lot of room to tell some different stories, you know, and it can be supernatural. It can be fun, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, I like traditional American comics, but that's why. So with my own project, the Black Spartans, that's why I went the manga route, because I'm a huge anime fan. Me and one of my friends was just talking like, man, wouldn't it be dope if we just created our own anime? And I'm like, well, we got to start with a manga. We can't just go.
Word.
I ain't got that animation kind of money. I'm an executor. So I'm like, well, you know, well, it can't be that hard.
Right.
You know, and then I say that. And then I literally said that I spent like 3 years researching writing before. No, we did it. But I'm in a bunch of like black anime nerd groups, and I know that there is a real hunger for those anime and manga type stories. A lot of people, especially people that only like focus on making traditional American comics, traditional like superheroes, like, oh, well what's different, you know, like what's different from this superhero comic versus this manga? And you know, the tropes are different, the story arcs are different, the type of storytelling, and I feel like it's a little bit more linear. But it's like there's a huge hunger for that, as well as like for blackness to be represented in those kind of stories. Cause even though those are from Japan, and I mean, I know they're like China is getting into manga, and there's a lot of Korean stories that are on the rise. But even though it's primarily from Japan, but it's you know, a lot of the characters are blonde hair, blue eyes,
right?
And the like those are the central, you know, visual figures. And so, you know, because one of the things I wanted to talk to you about or you know, hear your thoughts on is because there's that hunger in manga, but there's also that hunger in just traditional American superheroes to see more Black characters. And then, and you I mean, it, depending on which groups you're in and how long you're in them, you'll find people arguing about, you know, like, oh, it's dope that Captain America is Black. And like, nah, we don't need to take other characters and just reskin them and make them Black. We need to, you know, make our own original characters. But I'm trying not to go on the soapbox because I'm asking you a question. but I don't think that is, like, why would Marvel or DC come out with a new character, put all this marketing into this new original Black character, just for people to, you know, probably not pick it up, when they could just take the Hulk and say, oh, look, the Hulk is Black now. It's like, y'all know the Hulk. Y'all like the Hulk. Yeah, right. He Black. So boom, there you go. So it's way, it's easier for them to do that. So what do you think the solution is?
I hear you, man. I think it's I stay out of those arguments because I feel like why not both, right?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, but also aside from race, you know, when I was reading comics in the 80s, there was new superheroes all the time in Marvel and DC, like all the time. And then it feels like creators really figured out, why am I going to create new characters if I'm not going to own them? You know? So it happens a lot less now. There's a lot less new characters in Marvel and DC. And so that's one thing, right? Like if somebody creates a Black character for Marvel or DC, it's for Marvel or DC to do whatever they want to do with them. And they never own them. But the other thing is superheroes, you know, like we said, like it's been maybe 85, 90 years that superhero comics have been produced. These heroes have been through everything. Thor has been a frog, you know, like, so, like, can Iron Man be a Black girl for 2 years? Yes.
Right. You
know, like Tony Stark's gonna come back. You know what I'm saying? So like you got the preceding 50 years of Iron Man read if you don't like the 3 years where it's a Black woman, you know, as Iron Man or whatever. Like you know, I think all of it helps. Like Miles Morales is cool. I think Riri's cool. You know, I mean, I didn't care for that South American Batman, Batwing, South African Batman. It was in the early 2000s. The art was really dope, but the writing was just not great. But, you know, that wasn't that interesting to me. But I, you know, like, because the real is, these characters were created largely by white dudes in their 30s and 40s because they were the ones who were getting hired. They weren't necessarily even thinking about other people. They were just created from their own experience.
Right.
Yeah. And so a lot of these characters, if they had been created by people of different backgrounds, you know, the characters would have been more diverse. You know, like Peter Parker growing up in New York, like it almost demands that he's Black or Latino. Do you know what I'm saying? But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess the energy that people spend on debating things, I think, could be better used in creating things.
Yeah. Kind of, I mean, and this will probably sound obvious considering that I got a whole podcast that's focused on indie creators, but I think the solution is indie creators. Because you're right. Like, if they took the Hulk and turned him Black, honestly, the Hulk is one of my favorite characters. I would love that, right?
Yeah.
Like I would watch it, I would read it. But I would still want to see those original and authentic, like originally created Black characters. And I think what all of the people talking about that they want to see, you know, Black characters, Black creators, and that are hungry for that. like just has to look to the indie space, because there are like it's there, and the quality is just as good as that mainstream quality, if not better. And you know, I'm the third smartest man in the world. They're not saying that over and over and over again.
Right.
I think that's the answer. Obviously, Marvel and DC, those big, they are always going to outshine the indie creators. But I think that if people looked at more indie stuff, or if the industry, people like to watch things more than they like to read things. And so which does happen, there are a lot of indie stories that get adapted to TV and movies. I think that's the answer, because I'm omnipotent and I know everything.
No, I think that's a good answer, man. I agree. Like, all right. Yeah. Even if I say like, you know, I was saying the energy people put in complaining, they could be creating things, but they could also be like actually searching for the things that are there, right?
Because,
you know, you got so many options. Like, even if you're not buying my stuff, you got your thing. You got Stranger Comics. You know, Sebastian, do you know Sebastian from Stranger Comics?
I don't.
Okay, so he does like black fantasy characters, and they just sold their comic to HBO's supposed to be developing a show of their show, of their comic. He's like a biracial British dude who lives in LA. If you ever see him in a con, study his hustle. Anybody who's listening, Sebastian is one of the best like salespeople in comics. Like, it's amazing. I've learned stuff from that brother, you know.
Yeah.
You got Harriet Tubman, Demon Slayer, you got like all these different cool black titles that are out that you could be checking for.
Yeah. The Harriet Tubman, Demon Slayer, I have read that. I mean, if you hear the name and you're not like interested in it, then that's a you thing, because like anybody listening, if you hear the name and you're not interested in it, it's I don't understand it. But it's just as dope as it sounds.
Yeah, I think the brilliance of it too is that the title tells you exactly what you're going in for, right?
Yes.
Like my title's all like mysterious and shit, right? Like The Burning Metronome, but you don't know what it's about, right?
Yeah.
But Harriet Tubman, Demon Slayer, you know. You know what I'm saying? You know what you're gonna see, and that's just really dope.
Yeah. Cool, man. What else? What else? I got this like list of questions, and I don't even know where we at on this list. But we start touching on it a little bit, and I want to make sure that we, you know, get some helpful tips and stuff in there for other indie creators, or if anybody just thinking about hopping in to create their own comic. One of the things that everybody gets told is that you got to build up an audience, right? Because you don't build. I mean, I guess you don't really have to. You could create your own book and just be the only person to read it. And if you're okay with that, then you're okay with that.
That's real,
right? But if you want to, if you are, you know, going in with that business mindset, then you gotta build an audience. And so, you touched on the press releases for a little bit, but just overall, okay. how did you go about, you know, like finding an audience for The Burning Metronome?
Yeah. And I realize I've been cursing out here. I didn't ask you if I could curse.
That's all right. That's all right. So, you know, the funny, I didn't even realize it. Like, it didn't register to me at all.
Nice.
So I'm glad you said that, so I can click the explicit button.
Right. Beep. Yeah. All right. So listen, first of all, I feel like creative people, we're always coming up with reasons to not finish it. Like, finish something, make something good. Don't get caught up in whether it's going to be perfect. It's not going to be perfect. But look at all of the artists that you don't think are great and see how much they put stuff out. And if they could put stuff out, then you definitely could put something out, right?
That's what's up. That's real talk.
Right. So finish it and then make it look good. Like, if you don't know how to get into InDesign or anything like that, you know, like, design the book, hire somebody if you need to, make it look good. So when people pick it up, they're like, oh, because Burning Metronome, I self-published that. Nobody knows that when they pick it up. They'd be like, oh, wait, oh, this is, who put this out? You know, like that kind of thing.
Right,
you know?
Right, yeah.
That's what you want.
Who's the publisher? What's the company? Right. Yeah.
Right. So once you got a thing, soon as you have a project, you suddenly move from the group of people with ideas into somebody who has something, right?
Yeah.
And most people have ideas. But when you have a thing that you've made, suddenly you're in a different group. So like when I put out that book, you know, we mentioned that I was a professor. Regis University reached out to me, the MFA program. They saw my book. They reached out to me and asked if I wanted to teach there, right? Which I had never taught. I didn't even think it was possible. And I was like, this graphic novel made me a professor? For real? You know what I'm saying? But like, but it's because I had a thing, right? And in my mind, I'm like, all right, now I'm getting like paid to speak at colleges and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, but just a few years ago, I was still the same dude.
Yeah.
So what's different? It's I have a thing. That's really it. So produce a thing. The other thing is that I realize people connect with personalities more than they connect with your art. Like they eventually do. They eventually start to come into your art. But like when you think of Andy Warhol, like I can picture him before I can picture his art. You know, when I think of Stan Lee, I could picture him before I think of what is my favorite Stan Lee story. But I know who he is, you know. As much as you can engage with people, whether it's like online or when the world is not poisonous anymore, when we can go back to conventions, you know, like that's part of why I started hosting the podcast. I try to give people multiple points of entry to connect with me, which was hard because I'm fundamentally an introvert. So I had to, you know, I'm not going to show up at your party and make small talk. I'm just not going to do that, right? But but by creating things where people feel like they get to know me as a person, it not only makes them more interested in what you're creating, it also makes them cheer for you more, right? Because they're like, okay, I remember this dude when he put out his first thing and I bought it at a convention. And now he's doing this and they know that they are part of the story. Like they supported you and helped you get to the point where you could create and create on the level that you want to. So there's something really good in people being able to connect with you. And so like, if you do like a podcast or a YouTube thing or show up and do interviews, or the first year I put up Burning Metronome, I was speaking for free at high schools, just every school I could, because they don't have many Black authors come. They don't have any Black artists come. Mm-hmm. And then a Black graphic novelist, they were all excited. So, you know, it was great. And so the more I did that, then I could start being like, what kind of budget do you have to bring me there? You know, so I can start to make a little money for that, right? But it's basically just be everywhere and connect with people. Even at a convention, a lot of comics creators, because a lot of us are shy, we sit down and we just kind of draw, or, you know, people walk by and we wait for them to talk to us. But when you're doing that, you're basically forcing somebody to interrupt you from drawing and ask you about your book. You know, so when I'm at a convention, I stand the whole time and I speak to everybody who walks by. And if they're in cosplay, I recognize, I say something, you know, and don't let no Black people try to walk past me at a convention and act like they don't see my stuff. You know, I'll be like, Black people, you know, come on over here, you know, that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, you know, so I haven't been to any conventions yet because, you know, COVID and I just put my first chapter out was last month.
Good for you,
man. Thank you. But you know, in my previous career, my 10 years of fitness, I've done a lot of like table events where, you know, I got to stay in there and try to sell fitness products. And so my thing was that I never stood behind the table. Like I stood in front of the table. Right. And so when somebody tried to, you know, walk around my table, I meet them and say, hey man, you might want to hear about what we got going on over here. So you're right. That energy to go out and get people and pull, not annoying people. There's a difference. Right, there's a difference between just trying to draw people in, and you know, I didn't follow somebody around the whole thing. Come back to my table. So there's a difference.
I'm glad you said that. Now I'm glad you said that, because that is a, like, you want to actually try to connect with people, right? So when I say I'm speaking to everybody who walks by, I really am just speaking to them. You know, and then if they like stop for a second, then I'll say, hey, you know, this book is a cross between Twilight Zone and Usual Suspects. And if they're not like 14 years old, they know what that means. And then, and then I'll give them my elevator pitch. Now, that's the other thing, is that you have to be able to have a description of your book that doesn't take 20 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you have to write it, because as much as you wrote your story, you know, people don't need to know everything that happens. They just need, you need to tell them enough to make them interested. So my elevator pitch for the Burning Metronome, I'll be like, okay, here's my elevator pitch. I'll do it like that with people. Are you ready for it? And they'll be like, okay. And I'll say, six courageous explorers find themselves trapped in a world where they encounter the strangest creatures they've ever seen, human beings. What? And then that'll be kind of the thing, right?
Yeah.
So your elevator pitch should be like a sentence.
I actually read that on your website, and I was like, that's interesting. So it's like even not saying it and just having it on your website draws people in.
Word, and I had to work on that, right? Like, people think like your description should just come off the head, but no, like I went through drafts of it, mm-hmm. and I was like, this is too long, this is not descriptive enough. You know, and you hear that. You don't know everything that happens in the story, but it should be enough to at least sort of pique your interest.
Yeah. That's kind of the goal. It makes you want to know what's happening in the story.
Yeah.
You know, who are these six beings, and how do they not know? Like, why are human beings the weird ones in this
right.
in this sentence?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, basically, you have to really treat it like a business. I mean, when I decided I was going to go from insurance into comics, I knew I wasn't going to be making money for the first year. So, I moved out of the house that I was renting I started renting a room in somebody's house, like hella cheap. I didn't love that.
Yeah.
But that's what I wanted to do. Like, I'm not married, I don't have any kids, so I could do that, right? So I reduced my expenses as much as possible so that I could take the risk in order to build a career in art. And like, you know, if you are able, no, I'm going to say not everybody can do what I did, but you can make a decision to reduce your expenses mm-hmm. in order to pursue art. Like, you can decide like, okay, I don't need cable. I don't need to buy Starbucks every day. Like, you know, you can start trying to figure out where can you cut out stuff so that you can actually put.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point, because I'm a video game dude, right? So I got my PlayStation, and you know, every time one of the new games come out, the new Assassin's Creed, all right, I'm gonna go get it. The DLC come out, all right, I'm gonna get that too.
Yeah.
And that was one of the areas, because I was like, man, if I'm cutting back on, if I'm gonna write this, I gotta find time, right? And so I can, you know, I honestly have as much fun writing my stuff as I do playing video games. Right. And I'm like, all right, well, now I can take that video game money and put it towards this art. So yeah, like I had experienced that you gotta figure out ways to cut back, to, you know, put in energy and money into this thing that you want. And I saw it as, you know, I'm spending money on video games, it makes me happy. I'm spending money on my comic book, it makes me happy.
Word. Yeah. And so all of that stuff, man, like it's all a hustle. It's all figuring out where do people respond to what you're doing, right? Like, I'm good at Facebook, I'm not good at Twitter. Other people are great at Twitter, you know? So, but I get a lot of engagement on Facebook, so I keep building there. I don't have to master everything, you know? Like, I just, okay, people responded there, I'm gonna build there, you know? Yeah. And I did a convention in Grand Junction, Colorado, which is like a very small town, but because it's a small town, I made more money there because the people came specifically to buy stuff because they don't have a lot of stuff happening there, right? Mm-hmm. So I made more money there. They get about 5,000 people. I made more money there than I made at Denver Pop Culture Con, which is 100,000 people. Because with 100,000 people, first of all, everybody's sensory overload.
Right. Like,
you know, there's so much stuff. There's so many things.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, so that place, it worked for me. So I'm gonna go back, you know? And, you know, I looked into doing stuff, like having stuff on distributed by Diamond before Diamond got kicked out by everybody. Like, you know, Diamond's the main comic distributor. And so I was like, okay, if I have my books in a store in New Jersey and nobody's heard of me, it's cool that Diamond's distributing it. But if nobody's buying it, then, you know, like, how is that serving my goals?
Right.
So I decided I would build locally and then expand. And so, you know, I basically wanted to make it so that everyone in Denver, when they think of comics, they think of me. And, you know, like, it has kind of gotten to that point. So people, the Denver Art Museum just contacted me to write and draw this comics project on Nat Love, the Black Cowboy, for one of their exhibits, right? Mm-hmm. Now, if I had not gotten press and done all these interviews and stuff like that, they would not have even been able to find me. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So like, it is about pushing and hustling and creating more stuff and always generating new stuff, you know? And that's, but the reward of doing that is that I do make a living off of art. I don't have another job. I'm not rich, you know, but I'm able to do what I love, make a living, and have people really like connect with it, right? Like, like that weekly comic that I do, I talk about all these political things. You know, so I do that for, the artist is Corey Redford. She's really dope. But like, I touch on a lot of hard things, but since it's online and they don't have a comment section on the paper, I don't really know what people's reaction is. But sometimes I meet people in the, like out in the real world, like couple of Halloweens ago, I was on a dance floor. I was dancing, working on my Michael Jackson spins. And, I saw this brother and we started talking and he was like, "What you doing now, man?" And I was like, "Oh, I write this comic." And this woman was like, she just overheard. She was like, "You write that? I just sent that to my mom this morning." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, those are really good moments, man, because like people, like I'm pulling something out of my soul and people are connecting to it. And I think that's the most beautiful gift in life.
Yeah. 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 I definitely feel you there, man. I'm looking forward to getting to that level. Or if, I mean, even if not, I'm just looking forward to writing more stuff and putting it out.
Do it.
But the last thing I wanted to ask you, because you talked about at the beginning about, you know, you were in insurance.
Yeah.
You were not happy where you were and knew you wanted to be further, knew you wanted to be somewhere else. And so now you're making a living doing this thing that you love.
Yeah.
Is there another goal? Did you move the goalpost? what's the ultimate? Trying to get movies made?
No, that's a good question, man. I'm definitely trying to expand past just making a living for one. You know, it would be nice to be able to pay off my mom's house or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I did write a movie. We're supposed to film it in September. One of my homeboys is a director in Atlanta, dude I grew up with there. And so we'll see. But also, to see some of my properties sold to television and movies, right? I would also like to expand reach because I have a decent amount of reach in Colorado. I have a few people overseas, a few people around the country, but I'm working harder at establishing, like that TED Talk was a big thing. The fact that people connected with that I gave and that a million people have seen it, that's more people than have seen me do anything.
Yeah.
But the beauty of that is because I use comics to talk about things that are important to me, you know, racism, sexism, oppression, whatever it is. The bigger my platform, the more that I can try to talk to people about those things and hopefully have a positive effect on the world with the art that I create. So that's kind of my goal.
Yeah. I can absolutely see Burning Metronome as a Netflix series. Like it just, if
you tell them.
It fits. I call them today. but for real, I really could. I could see it as you know, like the next Queen's Gambit. You know, like how that was Queen's Gambit was trending for a while. Because you know it was an interesting and different kind of series. But I can definitely see Burning Metronome as the next big Netflix thing. So
I appreciate it, man. Oh, before we wrap up, I'm going to throw out, you asked about how I learned about writing. One of the best books that I read was one called Break Into Fiction. It's by two women, New York Times bestsellers, Diana Love and Mary Buckham. And it really taught me about the structure of how stories work. And it's easy to read. Like if you sat down and read it, you would probably finish it in 3 hours. So it's not like some hard thing, but it completely revolutionized the way that I approach writing stories. And everybody that I recommended it to has benefited from it. So for whatever
cool. that's worth. Yeah. Like I mean, hey, I spent 3 years learning, you know, diving in to try to figure out writing was 3 more hours. So,
if you get it, let me know, man, because I really think it's dope.
Cool. Well, definitely appreciate you coming by. Alan Brooks, professor of graphic novels and so much more. Anything else you want to drop for the people? Where can they find you and go and read The Burning Metronome as they should?
Yeah, my website is R. Alan Writes. That's A-L-A-N, 4 letters more better. Don't put an extra L or E in there. So rallenwrites.com. You can actually read free samples of comics on there. You can see my TED Talk. There's a link to my podcast. And then you can write to me through it if you have questions or comments or anything like that.
Cool. One-stop shop.
Word.
Cool. Well, all right. Appreciate you coming by, man.
Thank you.
All right. So that does it for this week's episode. Hopefully you found a new story or a creator to follow or got some kind of helpful tips or information out of this episode in general. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. We got new episodes coming every Friday. If you happen to be interested in learning a little bit more about my own project, Black Spartans Manga, make sure you head over to blackspartansmanga.com or check me out on Facebook or Instagram at blackspartansmanga. Like I said, subscribe. We got new episodes coming every Friday. Really great creators coming on. Really excited about it. Don't want to miss it. All right. Holla at y'all next week. Peace.